heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
Well, first of all, you see that the swamp has returned there at the DNC, the convention. This is full on display, the swamp that President Trump has committed to draining. Now you're seeing that night after night up there, you know, people like Colin Powell, people like, of course, Chuck Schumer, John Kerry. There are so many of them, Bill Clinton, people that just represent the swamp that, you know, like any swamp creature, it doesn't go away easy. It fights every last breath. The swamp is really a breeding ground, is what we're talking about, for all kinds of unsightly creatures. The drain the swamp is a phrase that actually really came about its own in the 1980s. It was used by multiple politicians from all sides of the aisle. But it was Ronald Reagan in 1983 who brought it to light and said, he called, well, what it was, drain the swamp of bureaucracy in the federal government. That was in 83. And the focus of that was waste and inefficiency in the United States federal government. Now, this is a real eye-opener today. When you look at what we're dealing with now with our national debts and deficits and where the country sits. So with that waste and inefficiency, the head of this, he commissioned, was called the Grace Commission, was the program that Reagan had put into play. And its head was Peter Grace. He asked the members of that commission to, and I quote, be bold and work like tireless bloodhounds. Don't leave any stone unturned in your search to root out inefficiency. Well, the Grace Commission report was then presented to Congress on January 84. And this kind of showed that, you know, at that time, now we're talking different kind of dollars. Now we talk in trillions of dollars, and it'll be soon gazillions of dollars, but at least trillions now, as you see with the relief bills and stimulus. Just add a few more trillion here, trillion there. It's funny how the stakes keep going up higher, but the problems just keep growing wider and wider. We never really do address the core problem. They just throw money at it and keep moving forward here. That old saying about bankrupting our country and leaving nothing left to the grandkids is on full display right now in America. So that Grace Commission, listen to these numbers a moment here. Just take a look back here. This report showed that $424 billion could be saved in 3 years by looking at these inefficiencies, the waste, government waste we're speaking about. You heard the old sayings when they used to buy $900 hammers and things of that nature. I heard that as a kid. I remember that on the ball field. We would chuckle about that when they talked about the waste and inefficiency and money that was the root of all evil in Washington. That the sad reality of all that was it was taxpayer money. It wasn't their money they were spending on these $900 hammers or whatever the hell they were doing with it, right? But this has been a problem that's been building for a long time, for decades. Nobody ever addresses the core problem. Like everything is short-minded and it's short-range goals of the next election cycle here. So this problem continues to build and build and build. But the dollars back then that we were talking about, that they could save $424 billion, today that's not even lunch tip money anymore, you know, could be saved in 3 years. And that would rise to about $1.9 trillion per year by the year 2000. Now here's where it gets interesting. So it was estimated back then with the Grace Commission, with President Reagan, that without these reforms, that our national debt could potentially rise. It was estimated now, back in 84, it could rise to a huge, monstrous, whopping, crazy amount of money, like $13 trillion, like trillions. And, you know, back then it was like, what, $1 trillion? Like, that's 13 trillion bucks. Well, that was what the Grace Commission was for, was to cut that off at the pass, because Reagan wanted to root out waste and inefficiency in the federal government, you see? Get rid of these $900 hammers back then, right? And so if they put these reforms in that he was recommending through the Grace Commission, through those reforms that were presented to Congress back in 84 of January here, well, then the good news is, well, it would only rise to $2.5 trillion. So we'd only be $2.5 trillion in debt. Certainly better than $13 trillion that they were projecting back then, you see. Of course, that would be a gift right about now. That would be an absolute gift. Because to put that in perspective now, this was the year 2000 they were projecting, okay? Well, not to surprise you at all, but we're in the year 2020. See, so we're 20 years after that date. And now we're talking here dollars that are going to exceed $30 trillion after this COVID episode. By the time they layer on all this relief and stimulus money, that's the kind of money we're talking. It's big dollars, people. And so we go on with bankrupting America is something nobody ever really talks about anymore. But what's interesting about this, as we're now in full election season and cycle, and we're talking about the DNC, which we'll get back to in a moment here, is Donald Trump. You see, because his whole effort was, he picked up on the same phrase that Ronald Reagan used. Because Reagan used the same phrase, draining the swamp, back there in the early 80s. That's when he made that very popular and created the whole commission to root out the waste and inefficiency of government, you know. So Trump picked that up, and he realized that he'd realized this for a long time in the private sector. I mean, you just go back and look at a lot of the videos that Trump has out there, and it's very clear that he knew where our federal government was headed right off the cliff. He knew that in a whole lot of ways, and it's all documented now in many of the interviews he had as a private citizen. A lot of those videos are still circulating on social media and certainly on YouTube as well. But here, let's talk about the unorthodox nature of Donald Trump and his whole drain the swamp program. Because what's happening now with the DNC and the program that's taking place here is the swamp creatures don't like it. The swamp creatures were not happy just 3.5 years ago when Trump came to power. And it really was when the American people came to power, because they're the ones who put Trump in the driver's seat, clearly, right? And because the American people also, I think, have come to this flashpoint of realizing that we're in a heap of trouble and the swamp desperately needs to be drained. But keep in mind now, that's after 8 years of Barack Obama. I mean, number 44 was as corrupt as hell, and number 43, you know, George W. Bush, you had, you know, 16 years of spending money and building that swamp and building the inefficiencies of government. It even goes beyond that, back to the Bill Clinton years and right into the first Bush, you know. But Donald Trump, he was at a rally in Des Moines, Iowa, and this is what he said. Funny how that term caught on, isn't it? The drain the swamp term, he was telling. This was at a rally now in Des Moines, you know. He says, I tell everyone I hated it. Somebody said, drain the swamp. And I said, oh, that is so hokey, the president says now, you know. That is so terrible. I said, all right, I'll try it. So like a month ago, I said, drain the swamp. And the place went crazy. And I said, whoa, what's this? What's this? And then I said it again. And then I started saying it like I meant it, right? And then I said it. I started loving it. And the place loved it. Drain the swamp. It's true. Drain the swamp. And that's, you can just picture Donald Trump saying, see, the thing about that whole paragraph is Trump just says what he's thinking. He just, which drives the swamp absolutely ballistic. He just puts it out there in full daylight. I mean, what other politician would say it like that? You can't think of one. You can't think of one. That's really the charm of Donald Trump. Now, when I say the charm, Yeah, that's the charm of the American people with Donald Trump, but it's not the charm of course, the establishment, the swamp creatures. They don't like that charm at all. In fact, it makes them downright uncomfortable because these are people who thrive and live in the swamp. That's what swamp creatures do, people. They eat. It's a breeding ground for corruptness and, well, inefficiencies, as Reagan said back then, and government waste and lobbyists and selling one out for the next and without any concern for their families or the future of the nation. And the swamp has come onto its own. I mean, it's probably the single biggest factor of why the country is in the position we're in right now and why we are headed off a cliff, certainly a financial cliff, but we're heading off a lot of other cliffs as well if we don't begin to do something about it. We're at this pivotal moment now of this election 2020 where America has to decide. Trump has made them uncomfortable from day one because they've seen him as, I stated, a very unorthodox individual. He doesn't fit their swamp qualifications. He doesn't fit any of that. And he talks in this different, he paraphrases and talks out there like he talks like, well, like we would have met each other on the street corner somewhere and started with a conversation and started describing and talking about things and just putting something out there and in just plain English and just the way we meant it, which happens on street corners all the time, or at least it used to happen on street corners before the COVID lockdown business and all that, right? And that's what Trump is. And that's why he resonates with the American people. He resonates because he just says what's on his mind, which is what they don't like. The establishment, which is, again, the deep state, which is the swamp. It's all the same, people. Let's be clear. It's all the same. The swamp creatures, the swamp, the establishment, the deep state. It's all the same. It's the bureaucracy of government. And that's layered. It's not just the elected officials, as you've seen just recently with the CIA and FBI and DOJ and NSA and all of these alphabet soup program and agencies we have. It's all of them. And it's those people in those key positions that are in these programs that, you know, they're not in term limits. In fact, government protects them. These people, it's like an ironclad guarantee they get. It's very hard to remove people from government positions. Very difficult to get them out of here, as you've seen in recent times. And they're sort of protected. It's sort of, they have sort of a, they're cloaked in this protectiveness. It's like, it's an oath. You can't kind of remove them. The government gives them the protection. In the private side, you can't get away with any of this stuff. They throw you out the window. In the government side, you can get away with all kinds of things. They have no problem with it because you're part of that. You're part of that swamp, deep state establishment apparatus, you see. That's how that works, yeah. So this whole deep state, as you begin to realize what's taking place now with the Trump presidency, he has really, as you're seeing from some of the comments of the DNC, they are very clearly uncomfortable with Donald Trump. And they don't like his Twitter feed. They don't like his mouth. They don't like his comments. They don't like anything about them. And they certainly don't like it as his ideas. And they don't like the way he operates foreign policy, for sure. They don't like his domestic policies either. They don't like what side of the bed he gets up in the morning of, and they don't like anything about this man, period. In fact, it's more than unlike. They hate him. They despise him. They hate him. He is the ultimate medication for the swamp because he doesn't care what they think. He doesn't care that they don't like him. He doesn't have those kind of feelings. He doesn't get warm and fuzzy with people in that way, you know? Like if you insult Trump and you say something that really pisses him off, he's going to come back twice as hard and hit you in the gut. He doesn't go away crying. You know, he learned that on the streets in New York in the construction business. Tough business. That's where he learned a lot of his skill sets, as many of us do in the corporate boardrooms. You know, for a lot of years, we talked about bringing somebody from the private side, a citizen president. It was really far-fetched, but we talked about it. We talked about it in the 80s and 90s and the early 2000s. I know I talked about it many times. A lot of our people and around me talked about it. And And we kind of chuckled back then and said, you know, if we could only get, but it was a joke. It was a water cooler joke. Just funny, you know, because that was we all kind of knew it was unwritten again. It's one of these unwritten laws and rules, but you kind of, you know, if you're in the private side or you're a citizen, you know, you just, you know, if you're not a career politician, you'll have no right to be part of that. You're not part of that club and they don't like it. They don't like you. And even though that was the whole concept that the framers put out there, that you'd go to Washington and serve and then leave the swamp and get a ticket out of there, that never has happened over the years. We've become saturated and believe in our own bullshit. And it's just has grown over the years to, you know, and a lot of it's we've given the keys to the car to these politicians with no term limits. Well, we term limit the president, but we don't term limit the Supreme Court justices. We don't term limit Congress, the senators or the congressmen, the House or the Senate. None of them are term limits. They can do what the hell they want to do, you know, and stay there forever. And they do. And they leave in, you know, in a wheelchair, in an oxygen tank or in a coffin, either one. That's how most of them leave Washington, D.C. And by the way, if you're going to look at their and this is a good exercise to do one day when it's raining out and you don't want to get wet, just do some research and find out, man, how much these people are worth. Go look at the numbers and see what all these politicians are worth. I mean, it's beyond staggering. They are worth millions and millions and millions of dollars. They live in beautiful gated homes and mansions and live the life of luxury that you out there could never enjoy, you see. And they don't get paid that kind of money. It really is. I mean, most of them, it's about maybe $100,000 and change. I mean, it's not a lot of money. I mean, it's not the kind of money you're going to become a multimillionaire many times over based on those dollars. So then how do they get rich exactly? It's not like they're writing best-selling books and they're great authors, you know. It's not that either. Or there's some great personality, and most of it's because they're selling themselves out. They're selling their souls out. They're selling their countries out, and they do it with all the big pharma, big business, big tech. It's all these big selling out to the big establishment. They're all sleeping with each other. Big business, big tech, big med, big pharma, big government. It's all that's. You want to talk about the elites? That's the elites right there. And in fact, if they ever get their way and socialism takes root in America in a bigger way than what it already is now, these are the people who would be at the very elite at the top. We would become their servants even more than it is now. We would basically become their bitches. I mean, that's what, and that would really happen. We're already seeing that now, but these would be the elites. See, that's what socialism is. It's just a two-tier system. It's got your power brokers at the very top. The people who, you know, can do their thing. They can buy a roll of toilet paper in tough times. And they can probably get somebody to wipe their ass with it too, if they want, you know. But just saying. And then you have the rest of us. We would be the rest of us. And there's no media. We wouldn't be talking like this because they would have their foot up my backside at that point. That kind of all goes away. Of course, the Fourth Estate, they're so stupid. They haven't figured this out, that they would also become the socialism's bitches as well. They haven't figured that out yet, by the way, ironically, that they would be almost the first to go. Unless some of them are the very elites at the top and can become part of that club, of course, in some of the fashion, but they're not going to be able to run their media empires in any open fashion. It would have to succumb to the state. The power brokers, the dictators in charge. You see, that's how that all works. And so there would be them and the rest of us. But the media, they're so brainless and inept of figuring this out that they would be the first on the chopping block. It rattles the mind, quite honestly. Rattles the mind. I can't figure that one out. I can't give you any more. I don't know. I don't know if it's just an IQ problem or they're part of some larger conspiracy. I don't know. We'll get more back to the swamp. Let's talk about this DNC a moment. Now, this is where the swamp returns. This is like the swamp gasping. Or you can hear them. I mean, this is their gasping for air. This is where they're trying to, you know, hang on to the power. This is, you know, they got to hang on now. Donald Trump, the big bad boogeyman from the Bronx, is in here, and he's kicking our asses here. We don't like it. He wants to do the Reagan thing and drain us all, inefficiencies of government. And, you know, and Trump is like that. We talk about that later, too. But Trump is very cheap, very thrifty, very conservative. Even when he was a Democrat back then in the day, if you can believe that, or he was still a very conservative. He didn't realize it. It's funny because we'll visit this point again as well. They always say when you're younger, you're more liberal and, you know, hey, you know, you let it all hang out and nothing really matters. And then as you get older, you realize what life is really about. You realize responsibility, and then you grow a brain, and then you get conservative, and then you die. So typically your older people are going to be a little more conservative, your younger ones that are, you know, burning stuff and killing, I mean, the universities and the campuses and all the yet more liberal, progressive or socialist, communist. And of course that's now multiplied because the older folks who had the brains let the universities and college systems go to hell, and they gave it to the swamp and the swamp creatures, which gladly took it and groomed the next generation, which was the Generation Z for zoo. And the zoo now is running the farm there for a lot of that stuff that you're seeing in Portland and Seattle and Chicago and New York City and so many other beautiful cities. Oh, it's a fairy tale, people. Absolute horror tale, actually. Horror tale. But where was I? So swamp creatures. The swamp returning. Yeah, the swamp returning here. There's so many things to tell you about. My mind moves quicker than my mouth, as you can see here. But so a lot of these swamp creatures now. Let's go through a few of them. Yeah, but before I do, let me do the same thing. Now, I want to play a clip. Now, this one here, I'm not going to, if you remember the other day, I gave you 5 minutes. I'm only going to ask you to buckle up for 3 minutes. I got a 3 minute, because the other night of the DNC, this wasn't as entertaining. It was definitely entertaining, but the first night was really entertaining. A lot of the things there that were said were, well, as we talked about just yesterday, we exposed, were quite interesting, quite something. And but I want you to listen to this 3 minute. And in case you missed the DNC, if you're not following and watching every night, which I am not, as I've already given you full disclosure yesterday about this, I do not watch this sort of nonsense or silliness, foolishness, you know. But I do read all the transcripts and excerpts and watch the videos afterward, because I can downplay it. Instead of losing 4 or 5 hours of my life, I only have to lose less than an hour, you see, and I can get up to speed real quick. And I just have to tell you that. So I don't encourage you to watch it all either, so you lose your life in the process. But let me play 3 minutes of a summary, and then we can join each other on the other side, and we'll talk about the swamp creatures and their last gasp of air and all the things they're saying. Listen in.
Fell in love with a man and two little boys standing in the wreckage of unthinkable loss. How do you make a broken family whole? The same way you make a nation whole, with love and understanding.
Faced with a president of cowardice, Joe Biden is a man of proven courage. He will restore our moral compass by confronting our challenges, not by hiding from them or undermining our elections to keep his job.
His faith is unshakable, because it's not in politicians or political parties or even in himself. It's in the providence of God. His faith is in you, in us.
Donald Trump inherited a growing economy and a more peaceful world. And like everything else he inherited, he bankrupted it. When this president goes overseas, it isn't a goodwill mission, it's a blooper reel. He breaks up with our allies and writes love letters to dictators.
If you want a president who defines the job as spending hours a day watching TV and zapping people on social media, he's your man.
170,000 Americans have died from COVID, and Donald Trump says it is what it is. America, Donald Trump has quit on you.
Just one thing never changes: his determination to deny responsibility and shift the blame. The buck never stops there.
And out of this long national nightmare, America will finally awaken to a brighter future and a new day.
In fidelity and gratitude to a mass people's movement working to establish 21st century social, economic, and human rights, en el espíritu del pueblo, and out of a love for all people, I hereby second the nomination of Senator Bernard Sanders of Vermont for President of the United States of America.
He'll make sure millions of people keep their coverage and no one can be denied for a pre-existing condition.
That's a big effing deal.
That's a big effing deal.
3 years ago, my beloved city, Charlottesville, Virginia, was attacked by white supremacists and a young woman was killed. We were attacked again when Donald Trump praised those racists. That was the day Joe Biden decided to join this battle for the soul of America.
When my daughter was murdered in Parkland, Joe Biden called to share in our family's grief. I quickly learned about his decency and his civility, but I also learned about his toughness. Florida cast 57 votes for Bernie Sanders and 192 votes for our next president, Joe Biden.
Indiana casts 2 votes for my friend Bernie Sanders and 86 votes for the next president, Joe Biden.
Delaware is proud to cast its 32 votes for our favorite son and our next president.
Our friend, Delaware, Joe Biden.
And that's a big effing deal, as they say there. Quite something, huh? So there's your highlights, lowlights, or whatever you want to call it, depending on how you look at it. And there are a lot of takeaways from some of that. And, of course, what you didn't hear is Colin Powell, the former Secretary of State, because, well, they ran that video just before they began their festivities for this convention, virtual convention it is, virtual convention to elect Joe Biden. One of the people you just listened to is John Kerry, the former Secretary of State, and a man who has clearly violated the Logan Act multiple times over. And if anyone was going to be suggested to be brought up on charges of whatever that they don't honor the Logan Act, but if they were to, this would be the man who would be in a federal prison for sure, because he has been running foreign policy all over the world, and he's been working with the OFA and the Barack Obama's organization down the road there in Washington, D.C., and he has interfered with Middle East politics and European politics, and he has been really nasty, is what Kerry has done. But it's like a shadow government, almost, is what I would say to you, and they've been running and operating a shadow government, basically, for the past 3.5, almost 3.75 years now, is what's taken place. And this is what we got. This is it. So he says, Kerry, and I quote, Donald Trump inherited a growing economy. Now, this is funny, hysterical, right? And a more peaceful world. And like everything else he inherited, he bankrupted it. Now, you know, that in itself, people, I mean, if you're going to compare the economic power and might of the Obama administration over those 8 years, which really was in that meager one and change percent, the most he would have got us up around 2% of growth, compared to Donald Trump, who put it on steroids, clearly, and we had more jobs and more economic prosperity, and with every kind of, what was impressive, it was all America. It's not, of course, they, and this is what got them caught a little bit in trouble. They were a little short-sighted because they loved to call Trump a racist and a xenophobe and, you know, a sad state of affairs for a president, you know, and it was hard to do that. You notice they back off a lot of the jobs because they had no argument, because the president created unprecedented growth in the Black American community, in the Hispanic community, in the Asian community, in the woman community. I mean, he did so much and so for all of America, because that is the way I believe Trump looked at America, that it was inclusive. That's even though they, again, they always make the argument, you know, they flip it, they projectionism. I mean, they're perfect at it there. And that's what the Democrat Party specializes in. And they've certainly done that here with Trump and this economy. I mean, nobody can really dispute, except John Kerry, of course, that President Trump did amazing things for the economy. And this was because of the pro tax credits and the business and the cutting back of regulations was, I think, the single biggest thing he did was those regulations to get government the hell out of the way for business to operate, for capitalism to blossom and grow, for entrepreneurship and entrepreneurial people to feel comfortable with jumping into, you know, pursue their dreams, their goals, and people were comfortable. Businesses were growing, and people were opening up new businesses. Now, that's all changed a great deal. But friends, if you're going to make this election about anything, and you want to make it about the economy, and certainly Americans in previous elections, the economic conditions are single issue number one for electing a president, and that's been proven time and again, which is what made them so nervous last November when the president was rocking the boat there and things were really, nothing failed. You know, when they were going through the impeachment process, when the swamp creatures were gasping for air and trying to do the Mueller thing and the witch hunt and the, you know, the, all the things didn't, Ukraine, 25th Amendment, all those things didn't work. And now they were really gasping for air because the election, we were now going to turn into 2020, the year that was supposed to be perfect vision for America. And it's going to be a great year for all. We were looking forward to this year. Even some years ago, we talked about 2020 being a spectacular year. And that was the feelings, really. And so last November, you can see where the creatures were highly upset and unsettled. They were, you know, keeping everybody up at night there in the swamp in Washington because, you know, they were meeting in the back rooms trying to figure out what do we have next? What can we possibly do to remove this president? And this is, again, before the China virus or the China virus, you know, and certainly before they decided to destroy our great cities and make socialism the major piece of their campaign to elect the, really, the Biden-Sanders administration, or Sanders-Biden, probably be a better way to say it, and then Harris will be below that, or probably even... Maybe we go Sanders, Harris, Biden, and he probably won't even be there. He's you know, not well. I mean, he's not going to be able to function clearly. But anyways, it's going to be Sanders and Harris and AOC, a little bit of AOC mixed in there because she loves Bernie Sanders and Bernie Sanders loves her. They're two made in heaven there. The two of those, who, like I said, they're perfect. Little dictators for some little empire, some third world shithole country, right? Perfect. So anyways, this grown economy and a more peaceful world, John Kerry says, that Trump inherited all that. And like everything else he inherited, he bankrupted it. Darn him. And they did such a swell job. The Obama years, we were just singing in it, you know. I mean, these people, not only do they lie to your face, my fellow Americans, but they continue to beat the drum and lie, and then they stand on their soapbox and they continue to push it down your throat like it's some sort of gospel truth. And you know, they are just nothing more than blatant lies. And the worst part about it, the insult to injury on all of this, is that you would hope or think that most all of America would know this and would figure out the basic truth, the vanilla truth. It's not complicated to figure this out when John Kerry says stupid stuff like this. But the problem is your media doesn't put it, they don't dispute any of this. They support John Kerry's quotes and his position. They support the swamp. They are the swamp. And so that's why you got your work cut out for you out there, people. That's why we, the people, have our work cut out for us, because the media, the Fourth Estate, is central to the swamp. And they clearly protect all this information. So there's a lot of America running around that don't have a blessed clue of what's going on. They really believe, they'll read a John Kerry quote like that that's in about every major publication today and every television station on the far left wing, rags and wings of the Democrat party there, the socialist Democrat group there, and they'll believe that. They'll read that and say, oh my God, so Trump, oh wow, he did inherit that growing economy. Yeah, I guess you're right. Things are pretty bad now with COVID. That President Trump is... you know, he's flustered all that away. Hadn't done a good job in a more peaceful world. Yeah, yeah, the world was more peaceful back there. And he was creating all that hope and change stuff, you know. And so this is the problem we have, is that the truth, if the truth is to prevail, we're going to have to get the truth out there. Kerry finishes it up and says, when this president goes overseas, it isn't a goodwill mission. It's a blooper reel. He breaks up with our allies and writes love letters to dictators. And this gets really interesting here, and it rips me up when Kerry says something like this. And I'm going to explain more about that to you and a whole lot more. And also Colin Powell, very fascinating comments from Powell, I believe. You stay right there, folks, and we'll be back on The Voice of the Nation just after this pause.
The silent majority has spoken. We say, let the silent voices be heard. You can be the voice of change. Contact our producer at liberty@americaoutloud.com. liberty@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
So the former Secretary of State John Kerry, the guy who should be in prison, the guy who is, he is the poster child for the Logan Act. He should be the pitcher in the Wikipedia dictionary when they talk about the Logan Act. Should be a pitcher John Kerry there, who is the one who, empower the act and rename the act, and let's call it the Kerry Act, and put him in prison for doing what he did. That's what I'm suggesting. Let's not call it the Logan Act anymore. Let's call it the Kerry Act, and let's put him in prison for abusing it more than any other single human being that I can see in recent times that has abused that act in full daylight. Let's rename the act. Let's enforce the act. Let's make Kerry, give him historical. I mean, in a good way, he'll be blessed because it'll make history in the making. He'll name, we'll go on the act, we'll rename the act, and then put Kerry in prison for a period of time. Now, it doesn't have to be his whole life, but it'll be enough time that he gets really old. And, and that's it. That's what I'm suggesting. That I think that's a swell idea to do for John Kerry. This notion of his that, the president, when Trump goes overseas, isn't goodwill mission, it's a blooper reel, okay. But of course, Barack Obama went overseas and he apologized for America exceptionalism and America might and American innovation and the American willpower. This is what Obama did consistently. He did it in his first tour in Europe, but he continued to do that, people, throughout his whole administration. You see, Barack Obama was unsettled with America. They hate America on the far left. They absolutely hate it. He hates America. And I hate to say that, but I'm going to say it because it's the truth. Number 44 hates America. That whole group hate America. A lot of the swamp hate America. Not all of them now. I'm not saying all of them, but a good many of them hate America, And this you can see. This is the mantra. All these people who are struggling and want to tear our country apart and who are being part of what's happening right now really do hate America. And they don't like what we stand for, clearly, here. That's where the struggle is, the internal struggle that we're having here in our nation right now. And it's a big one. I'm suggesting to you that anything could happen just ahead. It's hard to say what's really going to happen if you all don't get motivated and we don't begin to take this thing back, But Obama would go and he would apologize for all this. See, whereas President Trump walks in a room and he hugs the flag, he just can't get enough of America. You see the comparison, the contrast here? Are you seeing the contrast, people? It could not be clearer. Problem is, you're not going to see this out in the media. But do you see what I'm saying here? You got one guy who walks in the room who embraces the flag. He loves the flag. He salutes, he celebrates the flag. He is patriotism. He celebrates our military. He celebrates law and order. He celebrates American capitalism. He celebrates American independence and energy independence. But of course, the people who hate America don't like any of that, clearly. But you got one president who did that. You have the other president who was continually apologizing. Now, I'm not making that up. I know that sounds a little sick, a little demented, and like I'm really making shit up, but I'm not. I'm not making it up. It's the truth. You just don't hear the truth out there. So when he says that, that's it. But the other thing I like about Kerry says here, he breaks up with our allies and writes love letters to dictators. See, this is really where it gets interesting, because this is what makes Trump so impactful and unique to the swamp and to the world. And the swamp creatures can't handle this, because Trump is an innovator. His mind moves differently. You see, when you're in the private side and you're in the business side as an executive, you want to solve problems, and that's what a CEO does. That's a CEO mindset, in fact. But you want to look at things a little differently. You see, you look at the problem in a different way than you do when you're in government. See, when you're in these government bureaucracy and political elected positions, you don't give a rat's ass. You just do whatever it is. You don't care. They just don't. They just keep getting a check. You don't fire them. They don't have term limits. You don't get them out of there. You see the problem with all of that, right? You see what's happening. And it feeds onto itself. And the swamp grows and grows, and all these creatures get bigger and badder and richer and more. And they buy more ice cream for their refrigerators. And they buy the double stainless steel ones and the triple stainless steel ones. And like I said, and it's all of that. It's amazing on that little salary they make from government. So it's truly, they're magicians, in fact. Total magicians, I'm telling you. The definition of insanity is to continue to do the same thing time after time after time and bang your head against the wall. That's insanity. And that's where our government is right now. They have been doing that for a very long time in the making. And this president, this unique individual, came in and said, well, I don't want to do it the same way you did it, which is why he does put the test to the allies. I agree with that. He makes them pay their, because my fellow Americans, I mean, they have been... taking advantage of America for a very long time. Our allies, I mean, we have, allies, I mean, that's a tricky word. You can define allies in many different ways, but the allies have their hands in our pockets and on our wallets. And we have been, the American taxpayer, that is, has been the ones that they spend the money. They spend your money out there, and it's just they've abused everything. And so the president has put them to task, and he's made people be responsible in a lot of these international organizations like the United Nations and the World Health Organization and the trade people, the NAFTA and all of the trade deals, the China, the Asia Pacific, all of these. This is why it's been so confrontational. And the president has been, but the president has gotten his way. I mean, Trump has gotten his way many times when he got, the new, he's got the USMCA to replace NAFTA. That was like, oh my God, And then finally, the left couldn't say anything more because it was happening. And the new agreement was much better for the United States. You notice they couldn't come out, and even Schmucky Schumer couldn't say too much about it after the fact, I'm saying. Before that, they did, because they lied. They try to spin it the other way to get you all to, so the, public opinion will shoot it down. But Trump outsmarts them. That's where Trump plays multi-level chess, and he outsmarts them. It's kind of interesting. I'm very fascinated with Donald Trump. The more you look at him, he's a fascinating human being for the times. And very unconventional. The word is unconventional, unorthodox, and that's where Trump comes from. He tries things a little bit differently. So instead of North Korea sending missiles over Japan, or big ally out there, and instead of having the old, the peninsula out there as unsettled as it was, He tries to go it at a different road. He tries things a little bit more. It's unique in the way he takes on these problems. And that's what you say. So that's where a swamp creature like a John Kerry, they just can't accept that, people. It's why he says, his quote is, he breaks up with our allies. I mean, that's like killer to John Kerry. That's like, they don't want anything unorthodox. They don't want anything that's pro-American. They want it to be like the way it was. They're looking for that way it was, the ineffective way it was, that we were slowly but steadily going down the yellow brick road. That's what's happened here now, which is why I think we now find ourselves in this very awkward position where we've come through a pretty tough 4 years now since Obama has left the White House, because the deep state establishment swamp creatures are highly offended. They are out now and they are swinging for the fence because the swamp has sort of been drained enough to be exposed. And they don't have as much of that swampness down there, that green murkiness to feed onto themselves, you see. So they're being cut off. It's like they're not being fed as much. And so they're sort of dying. And they're gasping. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell, and I quote, he says, "I support Joe Biden because beginning on day one, he will restore America's leadership." Now, that's the swampy leadership that Powell is. And by the way, the media gets in there and always says, Powell, another Republican, goes against, along with Kasich, goes against the RNC. They don't like the nasty GOP. The media wants to make that a big deal, like all these big Republican names. Colin Powell hasn't supported a Republican all the way back until, you have to go back to George W. He didn't support Romney and McCain or anything that's going on in recent years. He was just Judge George W., because George W. was a big part of the establishment swamp creature state. He was, the Bush family was, they were all part of that whole establishment, deep state swampiness, the swampy crowd. He was all part of that. And so he hasn't been a Republican in a long time, long, long time. He's been a Democrat, and he's been clear about that. He supported Obama all the way through. He's given up on all of it. So now he is talking about restoring his version of America's leadership and moral authority. Moral authority. I like those words, moral authority. And that's what Powell is looking for. So you see where he wants to go. He says our country needs a commander-in-chief who takes care of our troops in the same way he would his own family. Well, okay, Colin Powell. So Barack Obama was gutting our military out, shrinking it to size where we couldn't fight our way out of a paper bag if we weren't being too careful. We didn't even have parts to replace in our military components, the hardware. I mean, our budgets were shrinking, our military was shrinking, China was growing big time worldwide, and this was the position that Barack Obama put the United States in. That's what you're looking for, is it, Colin Powell? Is that the kind of America you'd like to have? Yeah, that's taking care of our troops in the same way he would his family. Well, maybe that's the way you treat your family, Powell, but we don't want to treat our American family that way. Thank you very much. And this president has been about as pro-military, and pro-law enforcement as certainly anything I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen anything even close to this guy. I mean, he wakes up in this mode of loving our military and loving our law enforcement. You can see that in everything about him. Every part of the body language of President Donald Trump speaks to that point. And everybody knows it. They all know it. The left, they everybody knows it, you know. So anyways, Powell is really unfortunate and unsettling. It's unfortunate that Powell has chosen the road. And it's sad that he is willing to take on a life of socialism for our nation and willing to continue to be part of the swamp, you know, that he wasn't, he didn't have the capacity to stand up. It's called damage control at this point, I think. A lot of years of nonsense here that we are paying the price for. There's a lot of cleanup to happen, too, once we get through this COVID episode. I mean, we're going to have to roll our sleeves up and get busy. I know I'm ready to, but we're going to have to as a nation, because it's we've got some big challenges once we get through the COVID thing. And I pray we can we can resurrect our cities. But right now, people are leaving our cities in record numbers, and the decline in our cities you haven't even felt yet, people. I mean, it will make you cry. I mean, it will make you cry. It is, they are becoming futuristic, total hell holes, and nobody is going to want to be there. That's going to be part of the order of the day or the rule of law. They're going to be centers of criminal centers where the worst possible creatures, worst possible denominators will reside there and will take advantage of other people. That's what's happening now in Portland, in Seattle, in Chicago, in New York City, in all these areas. It's becoming, and it's coming into smaller markets as well. They're doing it there as well, because the gangs and the fascist people, the Antifas and the Black Lives Matter, the radical extremists, Marxist groups are they're fully engaged right now, as they're joined with the swamp creatures, and they are trying to take America down. More than just a few notches, they're trying to take the whole operation down, people. So we got some work cut out for us, I'm telling you now, you know. Anyways, Powell is a big disappointment. We'll just get over that right now. And he is obviously going to support everything that is the Democrat values, the values he talks about, whatever. It's a lot of blah, 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 blah. I'm not even going to waste any more time on, okay, because it's not worth our breath. AOC is also not worth our breath, but they only gave her, 60-some-odd seconds, I said. But this was funny as hell, actually. She says, as you heard on some of the clip there, you might have chuckled in and laughed. She says, I quote, "I hereby second the nomination of Bernard Sanders of Vermont for president of the United States." This is like a Rip Van Winkle moment. She just woke up and, oh, my God, had another V8. She still thinks that Bernard is going to be the man. He's going to be, and in some ways he is, because the Democrat Party, you see, they have no ethics and value. They just sell out to anybody. There's no credibility in that party. There's no, they just nothing for them to grab onto, people. As you've seen back with Hillary Clinton in 2015 and 2016 and the DNC and the superdelegates and all of that nonsense and Bernie Sanders. And of course, Bernie, the problem with Bernie is he's very popular and he should have been the nominee back then in 2015, 2016. And because he had a big movement, he had the biggest movement beyond the MAGA movement. It was those Bernieites that he had there. And because this is why the kids, the Zoomers or the Zoo people, they've been trained that way, that socialism, communism is a beautiful, bright future for everybody. So we can all be poor together. And so they've bitten into that whole strategy. So they've seen Biden as the, he became the panacea for that whole thing. Absolutely. And that's the struggle. That's the struggle. But AOC, whoever put this whole virtual convention together and should be commended for the stupidity clause of putting some of these things together that they've done so badly, so poorly. But to put her on there and give her 6 seconds, I mean, is truly amazing when she nominates Bernard, who is not even, I mean, he didn't get it. He didn't get it. Alexandria. He didn't get it. So, but you see, they've made enough inroads at this point with her and her SWAT players and bringing all of that into Congress. And now they got more people on the ballots trying. This is where you got to be careful now, America, where we teeter and totter on the end. As you got the Marxist groups out there, you got this infiltration in Congress. You got these lunatics on the fringes, and you got these people that are brainless in the Democrat Party. I mean, this has got to be the end of the Democrat Party, and we got to put them out of their misery. And that's where America is right now. We need a new party to take over. That's what I think needs to happen after Trump wins here in 2020. Now we need to, I'll help them do it as well, but we need to get the moderates together. I mean, we don't want one party in our country. We probably need more than two parties. I'd like to see three viable political parties. I think would be better off actually. And I don't want to see the Marxist Democrats as one of them. I think we need to put them out of their misery and be done with it. So I think the people in the Senate part of that party need to come up and rise and begin to take something over the JFK Democrats. I'm speaking about the Blue Dogs, those people that, you know, that don't want to necessarily be a conservative like myself or like many of you out there. That's fine. I mean, we don't need everybody to be like everybody. That's not the point here. I mean, we can have three political parties, so it's not a problem. I mean, I'm cool with that. You see, but we need that group to come together and rise and put some other name on it. Get rid of the word Democrat needs to go away, just like the name the Whig Party went away back in the 1860s. We need to make that part of the history book so we don't ever have to speak the word Democrat again. And I never use the word Democratic Party because that's a lot of rubbish. But the Democrat Party, it needs to go away, that it would never be again. And socialism and Marxism needs to be run right out of this nation. America, we the people need to stand up in 2020 and give a landslide victory to number 45, to freedom, to American patriotism, to freedom, to drop these people on their knees, and where they realize that the Marxist socialist campaign is not going to fly here. Pack your bags and leave. You see? And that's what needs to happen there. Now, these are answer right there. So I just laid out the plan. We'll give you three parties, one take over that. No more Democrat, go away, get that to rise, put another one in there, and let's just all battle out the issues every year. I'm cool with that, Matt. Every 4 years, we can battle out the issues. Let's get term limits in play for all of Congress. Even the Supreme Court justices, I want them to have term limits. I want them to be thrown off the bench. I don't want them to stay on there till they're dead or till they're in wheelchairs or coffins, oxygen tanks. I don't want that. I want them out of there. There's a certain capacity where we get older, where we're not thinking as bright as we were when we were younger. And those people don't need to be in those high positions controlling our lives. Get them out of there. There needs to be an age limit on this stuff. Or, all right, maybe not an age limit, but an IQ test. Need to have an IQ test. Absolutely. You can't be a Supreme Court justice. You can't be a congressman or a senator unless you pass this IQ test, okay? All right? So that's got to be the way it is. And all of that said, there's a lot more. The roll call and all of that was really, and of course, former President Bill Clinton, who said a lot of nothing. The only thing worthwhile that I would comment to you that he said in our closing moments here is that he went on and he talked about, you know, that he wanted to talk about a little bit of morality too, former President Bill Clinton, which is truly amazing that he even had. He said the Oval Office should be a command center. Like he's the moral authority to speak about what the Oval Office should be. Of course, he made it into a cigar center, but that's another story for another day, isn't it? Now, but he don't like the cigar center. He wants a command center. Wow, can't make that stuff up, people. I'll tell you what. But anyways, that's the DNC, and my friends, that's another whole boat of information. But it is a test of times, I will tell you. It is a test of times right at this very moment as we continue forward to a landslide victory in November here for freedom, for liberty, for all. Justice and liberty for all. Thank you for listening, being on the mission here, my fellow Americans. It's time to get involved and get loud.